And welcome back in. Monday Morning Blitz on GameDaySportsRadio.com. Boji Wood with you. Joined by Mike Bernard from OTM Sports in Las Vegas. And Mike, let's keep moving right through these college games. Florida 13, Mississippi State 6. I still don't think Mississippi State is that bad of a team despite two straight losses. Auburn better be ready this week.
Yeah, Mississippi State started out, looked like they were going to be, you know, they started out as on fire. Look, the first three games, they ran for 220, 384, and 331, but Kentucky held them to 56, Florida held them to 104. I don't know what's amiss there, but, you know, they've scored 7 points and 6 points the last two games. This Auburn-Mississippi State game's looking to me like it's going to be one of those 1970 or 80 SEC matchups.
Well, now, again, let's look at the defenses that they were playing against, Kentucky and Florida. And those are two pretty good defenses. Now, Dan Mullen knew that he was going to have issues when he came to Florida with the roster. You know, Florida has a lot of stockpile talent, but it's not functional together, so to speak. And he's working through all that right now. He's got Felipe Franks, you know, playing pretty good, and he's got the Gators playing within themselves. Not real flashy like you would expect from a Florida Gator team, but he's getting it done. But in my mind, the most valuable player on that Florida team right now, defensive coordinator Todd Grantham.
Well, let's go back and not to spend too much time on it, but I brought this up last year. He left Louisville. Their defense went to you-know-what.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to Mississippi State. They're stout. And then he leaves Mississippi State and go. Dan Mullen's a smart guy, okay? You know him well. And Todd Grantham might be the most underrated defensive coordinator, and he gets plenty of credit, but I still think he might be the most underrated in all of college football.
Yeah, and not only that, think back, it hadn't been that long ago. He had some great defenses with Georgia under Mark Richt when he worked there. LSU 45, Ole Miss 16. I see a lot of similarities between LSU and Georgia as far as just kind of playing sloppily when they don't need to. I think, though, the difference is LSU, they need the killer instinct, which I think Georgia has this year. And they need to be more disciplined. I mean, they got a stupid penalty at the end of the first half that allowed Ole Miss to go down and get a field goal, possibly could have gotten a touchdown out of it. But, again, just little things like that can come back and cost you big in a big-time ball game. But Joe Burrow, I'm going to tell you, I think that, you know, he's kind of what LSU has needed the last few years. Now, is he good enough to get them through Alabama? We'll just have to wait and see. But he's a lot better than what they've had over the last 5 or 6 years at that position down in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's exactly what they needed. And I saw it in game one when they're allowing him to throw over the middle when they're up double digits. That was like, I haven't seen that in 15 years, so he's more than capable. And the Ole Miss-LSU game, I had a small lean to Ole Miss. Of course, they did not cover. And the point spread was around 12. It got off that, so it helped me back off of it a little bit. But look, LSU, they're putting up points. They're stopping teams. And we mentioned it on Inside the Numbers. This is a rivalry that goes way back. And Ole Miss, until this game, they had covered 9 of 11 meetings in Baton Rouge, but LSU was too strong. They put up 45.
Ole Miss is going to continue to take some beatings this year. That's all that it is. They've got a long, long road ahead of them to get back. Of course, they've got the sanctions. Their best players transferred. Shea Patterson, he's now starting quarterback at Michigan. This time last year, he was on the roster at Ole Miss. You have to go back to 1994. Billy Brewer was fired. They named Joe Lee Dunn interim head coach for the 1994 season. And then they hired Tommy Tuberville. Now, you know, you would think that you hire someone at Auburn who has an outstanding record at their previous head coaching spots. And if you go back and you look at Auburn's hires all the way back to Coach Dye, that's been the case. But they – what happened was is Tommy Tuberville. He went 6-5, 5-6, 8-4, 6-5 at Ole Miss. Okay. He got the Auburn job with a 25-20 overall record, a 12-20 conference record. That got him the Auburn job. Now, you have to fast forward a little bit to Gene Chizik at Iowa State. I think what he was, 2-9, something like that, when he got the Auburn job. Bad. Yeah. So what that should tell you is that if you can go to a program that, and again, Ole Miss is a lot better program than Iowa State. I'm not going to deny that. But when sanctions hit you, I don't care. Look at Alabama. As strong as Alabama was, when they had sanctions on them, they were severely handcuffed. And that's when they had those mediocre records. And for Tommy Tuberville to go 6-5, 5-6, 8-4, 6-5 in 4 years at Ole Miss with the type of sanctions that he had, that was a remarkable job. And Matt Luke, I think he's the guy that'll see them through this. I really do.
Yeah, I like him. I respect him. And I believe when you're talking about Chizik, was he not the defensive coordinator in the 2010 team?
No, he was the head coach at Auburn. He was the he's got a national championship as a head coach at Auburn.
Right, but oh yeah, that's right. And so, but when did he become the Auburn head coach?
In 2009.
Okay. Yeah, and so that had people scratching their heads. I remember the footage of people yelling and screaming when he got off the plane, mm-hmm. boo, boo, we mm-hmm. don't want you, and he got a title, and of course he moved on. But I know your point was about the sanctions. And coach, let's go back and look. Oklahoma. Oh, USC, Alabama, a couple of times Auburn. I don't care how much blue blood you have in your veins. Mm-hmm. Those sanctions will kill any program.
Penn State, what they went through for several years when the sanctions were levied because of the Sandusky scandal. And they're just now, in the last season or so, getting back to where they were. Mike, one thing that I'm going to bring up that has absolutely nothing to do with anything except my wandering eye, did you notice anything special about LSU's helmets on Saturday night?
No, I did not.
Well, they only had numbers on them, and they had – well, I say they only had numbers. They had numbers and they had the stripes, but they did not have the Tiger logo on the side of the helmet or the LSU, and they had gray face mask instead of the purple face mask. Do you know what that was alluding to?
I've seen them footage of that in the past. Was it commemorating a national title year?
The 1958 national champs. That's what that was commemorating, and the 60th anniversary of that team. Billy Cannon was a star on that LSU team that won the national championship under Paul Dietzel back in 1958. But you know, something we talk about, we see Oregon and we see all these different schools that they're wearing a different type of uniform every single year. If you'll notice, the only thing that LSU had to do to create their 1958 uniform was take a logo off the side of the helmet and put a number on it and change a face mask from purple back to gray. That's the only thing. That tells you how traditional that uniform is down there in Baton Rouge.
Well, Coach, you know that you rarely ever see it. But I think when they wear the purple jersey, which is about once every 8 years, I think it's one of the best uniforms in all of college football, but they don't wear it because they choose to wear white at home. And most of the time they wear white on the road, of course.
Yeah, the last time that they had to wear purple on the road, or they were supposed to wear purple on the road, Steve Spurrier, he was the coach of the Gators, and he let Jerry DiNardo, who was the head coach at that time, that, hey, look, you know, y'all going to have to wear purple because we're going to be wearing white in the swamp. And, of course, that was Spurrier just, you know, getting a little jab in. The same way that the Washington Redskins used to and the Philadelphia Eagles used to jab the Cowboys and say, no, we're wearing white when we play you at our place. You wear your blue jerseys. But Jerry DiNardo, he had a little something up his sleeve, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but LSU, they went into the swamp, and they did have to wear a colored jersey, but they wore gold jerseys with white helmets and white pants back at that time. And speaking to your purple jerseys, LSU wears those against a non-conference opponent at night one time a year. If you'll recall, they wore it against Louisiana Tech last week.
Yeah, and it's a great-looking uniform. They're going to need more than great-looking uniforms this next stretch of games, Coach. I'm just looking at their schedule now. They go to Florida, then they play Georgia, then they play Mississippi State, then they play Alabama, and then if you then they get to exhale a little bit, but they go on the road to Arkansas where they've had trouble, and that Arkansas team might continue to improve a little bit. Up front, they're okay. And then they play Rice, and then they finish at Texas A&M. So I know they're 5-0, but that is a brutal stretch, as is always the case when you play in the SEC West. They go at Florida, then Georgia, Mississippi State, and Alabama. It's tough to get out of there unscathed.
No doubt about that. And this LSU team, like I said, we're going to find out a lot about them over the next 4 to 5 weeks to see if they are a contender or a pretender. And we got to find out about these two teams also. Notre Dame 38, Stanford 21. You know, I still don't know any more about these two teams right now definitively. I'm still kind of shaky on them because I see a lot of things that I like because Ian Book, since he's been put in charge of running the Irish offense, he's done a fantastic job. Saturday night, he was 24 of 33, 278 yards and 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. You had Bryce Love, and he only had 73 yards on 17 carries, but he left the game with, I think he re-injured the exact same ankle that he hurt last year. But now think about this. He rushed for 2,118 yards last season. Thus far, 5 games into the season, he's only got 327 yards.
Yeah, and he can't stay healthy. Much of last year and had to leave this game. This game, Coach, we previewed it on Inside the Numbers. The point spread opened Notre Dame 2.5. They went up to 6, settled back down around 4.5 or 5. But the defense won the game, and it's a good thing because we had the over, and if it wasn't for the defensive plays for Notre Dame, it probably wouldn't have gone over. But Stanford, I think they're eliminated. Washington is the only hope for the Pac-12, and they have to win every game. And frankly, they have to blow out every team. And even then, I think they get Pac-12 probably gets left out.
And I think a lot of what Washington's, window dressing would be is that if Auburn continues to have a pretty good year, then that loss doesn't look so bad. If Auburn ends up going 10-2, then that loss doesn't look bad. But if Auburn ends up going, 7-5 or 8-4, that loss looks really, really bad for Washington.
It does. And, I think certainly an undefeated Notre Dame team is going to get in the playoffs. They won't have a title, but it won't matter. Mm-hmm. Ohio State and Alabama have gotten in that way before. Mm-hmm. Their job is to pick the 4 best teams, and an undefeated Notre Dame team, even if the committee feels I'm not saying they would, but even if the committee determines they're not one of the best 4, I think they would find a way mm-hmm. to change their mindset and put Notre Dame in. But I'm like you. I don't know how good Notre Dame is. Remember the 2012 team? They were the only undefeated FBS team or power team that was undefeated that year, and they went and played Alabama. Notre Dame was 1, Alabama was 2, and, Alabama roasted them by 28.
Yeah, and Notre Dame, you're correct. If they go undefeated, they're going to be they're going to have 1, 2, 3, or 4 spot in the playoffs, depending upon what everyone else does. But, they're not going to be left out if they go undefeated. And, until they lose, they're going to be favored in every game that they have here on out. And it's not really a murderer's row, so to speak, of a schedule that they have to play out the rest of the year. I think their biggest chance for a loss comes against Southern California, and not because Southern California is necessarily such a good football team, just because that's such a great rivalry, and you never know what's going to happen. There's been a lot of times that one or the other has spoiled the other season when they were the prohibitive underdog.
Right, and that was a point I was going to make, is their schedule is not that daunting. You have USC on paper, you think, hey, they've got USC. Well, this is not the normal USC team. Mm-hmm. They do have to go and play at Northwestern, which Northwestern really almost beat Michigan. So they're capable, but they've only got, I believe they're 1-3 now. I don't see them slipping up against Navy, because Navy's down a couple of notches. Florida State, they have the athletes, and I know they don't look very good right now, but you're right. I think at USC, or maybe even that look-ahead game, because they play Syracuse before USC, and we saw what Syracuse did in Clemson. But I don't know. I don't see them. I agree with you. Vegas will have them favored in every game the rest of the way out.
I'm interested to see what Syracuse, how they come back after this game over the next couple of weeks, and see if the air is out of their balloon or not. Well, forget about talking about all these losers. Let's talk about the defending national champions, the Central Florida Golden Knights. They beat Pitt 45-14. Can't say they're not playing Power 5 conference teams. Pitt played them, and luckily for North Carolina, their game a few weeks ago was canceled because of Hurricane Florence, or I think UCF would have a couple of ACC skins up on their wall.
Yeah, and I always give kudos to the teams that go out and compete. You know, the Boise's, I like what Chris Peterson did playing Auburn in their backyard right out of the gate. Now, it's probably going to cost them a chance at the playoff, but I like the effort to compete. Central Florida, they'll play anyone, anywhere, but the Power 5 teams, other than the ACC and the bottom-tier Big Ten teams, they won't play them, and you see why. Central Florida was a 13-point favorite. It wasn't even as close as the score indicates, 45-14. And remember that the trend I brought up on the show, Coach, is the under's now 22-5-1 in Central Florida home games when they come off a spread win. And you have to keep in mind, yes, Central Florida, they average 50 points a game. But listeners that are going to wager on games, you have to understand these totals are so high. That total was 66.
Mm-hmm. Mackenzie Milton, he's a top-notch quarterback for the Golden Knights. And I would just say this, there's a good possibility of them running the table again. And if they do, and they don't get a shot at the playoffs, and that just proves what I've said since they started the playoff, that it's nothing but a sham. And so, because, I don't care if they'll play you. They don't care. And, and let's put it this way, unless my memory escapes me, the last three games that Central Florida has had against Power 5 conference teams, they've won.
Yeah, they have. And but they can go undefeated and win every game by an average margin of 28.6 points per game, and they're not going to get in.
Totally.
And it's just not going to happen.
No, it's not, and that's why we need to have an expanded playoff. We've got to have an expanded break here on the Monday Morning Blitz, GameDaySportsRadio.com. We'll be right back.